Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all that ships at sea, bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. My guests today are from Arcadia. We've got Jake Hochberg, the Executive Director of Customer Insights, and Anna Bosvitz, Vice President of Enterprise Partnerships. Arcadia is a leading healthcare management and health intelligence platform that transforms data from different sources into targeted insights. That really helps support the decision-making workflow to improve lives and these clinical outcomes. Jake and Anna are data analytics enthusiasts, and they work with hospitals, health systems, and health plans across the country, and are here today to talk about COVID's impact on service lines and what it means for the healthcare industry. Jake and Anna, welcome to the Tate Chronicles.
Thanks,
Jake. Thank you for having us.
Yep. First, just let's kind of address things from a high level. Can you describe the work that you've been doing on the service lines? Maybe talk a little bit about what service lines are and how they're used. I guess some definitions would be helpful for us there.
Yeah, absolutely. So when COVID first hit, we started doing analysis for our customers to help them understand, you know, what parts of their business might be impacted by the pandemic. And one thing that we have in our system is a lot of claims data. And within our claims data, we take this data, we group it up to create individual real-world events, and then we categorize them in specific service lines. So things like an inpatient medical admission or a surgical admission or an ED visit versus a radiology visit. So those are the types of service lines we have, and we were looking at, you know, how those were impacted by the pandemic and when and where.
You know, access to that data, where's that data actually coming from? Is it from third-party insurance companies, reimbursement entities? Where's that data? Where do you get that data from?
Yeah, our typical customers are in the value-based care space. So we mm-hmm. have a lot of customers who are large ACOs or provider groups, and we also have some payer customers as well. So in the case of a large ACO or provider group, we're getting adjudicated claims for their value-based population. And then from the payer perspective, we're getting adjudicated claims from payers. So, you know, across our system, we have over 50 million lives worth of claims data. And then for this specific analysis, we were looking at about 1.5 million lives where we had really good, clean data with a nice continuous enrollment period so we could do some deeper analytics.
So that claims data, I guess it, COVID, really the shutdown began, I guess, shortly after March 20th. 2020, sometime within the next week, the entire country started shutting down. People stopped going to hospitals unless it was emergency. They were not going to routine office visits. How real time is that data? How long did it take before you saw that incredibly sharp decline in claims?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So from a claims perspective, you know, you're typically lagged by about 3 to 6 months in terms of being able to do that analysis. With the Arcadia data asset, we also have ADT data and we have clinical data coming directly from EHR. So we were able to support our customers, you know, in more real time by showing them through clinical data, ADT data, what the trends looked like. And then when 2020 ended, we did some retrospective analysis to really dig into, you know, how were different segments of healthcare impacted differently. And that's where we use the claims data. So we were pretty lagged, but we now have a really clear picture of 2020 and really both of the first and second surges of COVID-19.
Certainly not talking so much about inpatient facilities, but ambulatory environments, general practitioners, specialists, those kind of healthcare folks. When COVID hit so abruptly, the impact really on the financials, there was a giant need to pivot. And for a lot of the ambulatory practices, they were able to pivot because of the declaration of national emergency to telehealth and other types of providing service. And so is that some of the stuff that you do that you alert healthcare entities to the variation and the impact that events have, and maybe suggest options, or how'd you handle that?
Yeah, I can hop in here as well, Jake, and then certainly feel free to add. I'd say overall, a lot of the value that we deliver here is getting our customers the data to be able to monitor these trends. Mm-hmm. So the organizations that we work with are keeping an eye on the types of care that their patients are and aren't receiving, and they're able to spot any of the hotspots really where there's outliers, right? Where there's particular trends, whether that's a population as a whole starting to receive less care, which is obviously what we saw here, or it's a subset of the population. So they're able to dig in and see in what zip codes, fast forwarding by a year, for example, in what zip codes are patients not getting vaccinations for COVID, or how do vaccination rates break out by various socioeconomic factors, by language, race, ethnicity, et cetera. And then they're also able to drill in and get very, very specific gap lists. They're able to see which practices or which PCP's panels may not be getting the appropriate level of care so that they can dig in and drive the right actions from there.
I would imagine that these the data on these service lines were over time fairly flat. Maybe they're increasing as the population ages, but then when COVID hit, that line on the chart dropped down, and we were expecting, or certainly there was a lot of talk that a lot of healthcare was being delayed. And that once we got through the acute phase of the pandemic, there'd be a rush to make up for all that delayed healthcare. And so with your data, you could probably tell by now if that occurred. Was there a big jump up after the acute nature of the pandemic?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And what we saw was that it was inconsistent by service line. So things really fell into three categories. There were service lines that were just not impacted by the initial surge. So hospice care, chemotherapy, those stayed flat. Those can't really be pushed off.
Sure.
On the other hand, there were a series of services that did exactly what you described. They significantly decreased, but by the month of June, they had bounced back and were either at or above what we would have expected them to be. Radiology really stood out there. So there was a lot of delayed CAT scans, MRIs, PET scans, but then, by the time June came, it was actually a higher volume of those than in prior years, as people made up for the lost services. Then there were actually some service lines though that we saw that really didn't bounce back even by June, and that things like physical therapy, speech therapy, and occupational therapy really decreased significantly and just did not bounce back. Even throughout the year, they stayed lower than they previously had been. And we saw the same thing on the ED side as well. So ED visits decreased significantly, and they've stayed low for all of 2020.
Well, and so I imagine that has something to do with the fact that folks were still very hesitant, and we had the Delta variant start impacting things, so people were still being careful. We mentioned a little bit where you get all this data from. Now, you mentioned you get from payers, you get some from actual clinical data. Any other areas you get all this data from, and how do you aggregate it? How do you collate all that data?
Yeah, I can hop in here, Jeff. So, there's a few aspects here. The real meat of this data, as you mentioned, is the claims data, which is giving us a very comprehensive view of everything that's happening to a patient, because at the end of the day, everybody wants to get paid, so everybody's submitting claims. The EHR data supplements that really nicely because you've got a much deeper and real-time view, so you're not just finding out that there was a PCP visit, and you can catch the particular diagnosis codes that got applied to it as deemed by that physician in billing department as relevant to that. But you can get into the vitals, you can get into the actual lab results, et cetera. So some of the other areas that it's common for our customers to be pulling from to supplement with that. Jake mentioned the ADTs. It's a really big one because it is so real time and so actionable. You're able to find out right away the fact that the patient's in the hospital. And that was great for us for our analysis, it was also, it's also really valuable on an ongoing basis for our customers who are monitoring this, who are looking to follow up and respond to patients and support them through those events and transitions. And then lab data, I would say, is the other additional area that we're typically loading in, again, to get that really detailed, comprehensive patient view.
And so, how do you get that lab data? Where does that come from? Is the majority of this de-identified data?
It is not. Okay. We're actually typically getting it with the patient identifiers.
Okay.
Because for most of our work, you know, there's obviously a substantial data volume here that makes it possible for us to do the kind of analysis that Jake is talking about here that allows us to really reflect on what's going on in the market. But the other side of this is that the core driver for gathering a lot of this data for our customers is ultimately to improve the health of their population and the health of their patients. And the de-identified data only lets you run so far in terms of understanding what you need to do at a very high level. But the more granular patient level information really allows you to dig in and say, which patient do we need to follow up with today? Who are the patients that are rising risk, that are rising cost, where we've got a really serious opportunity to impact a patient's health?
You know, something you mentioned there kind of brought something to my mind, and the concept of a patient identifier. I would imagine, or I'm guessing, that for the types of data and trends y'all are looking at, it doesn't really matter if you know who the patient is, or the actual identity of that patient, if they have the same name. I mean, you're just gathering the data and looking at that. Correct me if I'm wrong. But do you think we will ever get a national patient identifier?
It would make our job so much easier, wouldn't it?
It'd make healthcare better. Yeah.
It would. You know, a company can dream in a lot of ways.
Yes.
I know that there's been so much political reluctance against it. And to a degree, I understand where that's coming from. But, you know, we regularly run across articles and things like that where, you know, folks learn that they've been evaluated by some algorithm as being high risk for something or another.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fascinating article recently about a woman who needed pain medication and was actually was deemed by one of the algorithms out there to be particularly high risk for pain medication abuse because she had picked up a lot of pain medications for her dogs in years past. There's tons of very similar anecdotes out there around similar situations where John Smith ends up, you know, getting tagged with another John Smith somewhere in the system because their dates of birth are close enough or something like that. And I do think that having a patient identifier, if one day we were able to get to that, would hands down get us cleaner data to work with and get us a lot more precision in this type of work.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing. And of course, it's cultural / political. So who knows? You know, we've been hearing about it for 20 years for health information technology to be sure who a particular patient's data belongs to. For those that are just joining us, I'm speaking with Jacob Hochberg and Anna Bacevich of Arcadia. When did these trends spike? Were they related to a particular COVID surge, the trends you were tracking through 2020? Was there any particular region? Did it vary from region to region?
Yeah, so the original COVID surge impacted almost all service lines in some way. So that's one thing we saw with the first surge. It was just a shock to the system, and everything was impacted. What we then saw was, you know, to an extent, either a leveling effect, or in some service lines actually went over prior year baselines as there was a catch-up effect. But in the second COVID surge in the winter, that's where we actually saw I'd almost call it more targeted impacts. So instead of every service line being impacted, there were specific places where we saw decreases. So in general, when the second winter surge hit, that's where we saw inpatient behavioral health drop by about 8%.
Mm.
Inpatient maternity went down by about 10%. And it wasn't a decrease in deliveries. It was actually a decrease in aftercare and a reduction in length of stay. It was a reduction in babies in the NICU. There's really this kind of decrease in care for inpatient maternity in general. And then we also saw outpatient OB procedures, ED visits, and physical therapy drop again during that second surge. So I think what we learned from that was in the first surge, everything was shocked. The whole system decreased. But in the second surge, there was just this smaller subset of service lines that again decreased, even though in theory, we were more ready for COVID than we had been in March.
And Jim, if I can hop in, I think that this is where the long-term impact of this gets really, really interesting, because you've got this very obvious financial impact, right? We know this, that if patients aren't getting, you know, joint replacements and some of these higher margin procedures, that's a very obvious financial hit to hospitals. But as you start to look a few months out and folks start to get back in for that, you also have the long-term impact on population health. So when you're talking about patients not getting behavioral health care, you're talking about patients not having appropriate follow-up after deliveries, appropriate maternity care, that's something that has very serious long-term implications on population health. Those are situations where we know from all of the evidence that those patients are going to have long-term worse outcomes. They're not getting the right level of care at the right time. And especially as you think about that potentially hitting different populations across the country differently, there's a really concerning trend there from an equity in healthcare and a public health standpoint.
You know, I'm kind of interested in the work that Arcadia does. So if there is a large hospital system, and you, they're one of your customers, and you gather this data, and you're able to report trends to them, or what's happened in the past, and what's happening right now in some cases. What do they do with that data? How does that help them plan, or are you involved with helping them plan, or what happens when you report to them what's gone on historically?
Yeah, so I'd say, you know, the biggest part of this, first and foremost, is just having that visibility, right? So when you look at how hard health systems have been running for the past year and a half now, there's been so much just mental bandwidth in a lot of ways at the executive and leadership levels going into keeping the train on the tracks. Whether that's meant adjusting in early 2020 for the COVID cases that would be coming in, dealing with the very serious stress that puts on frontline caregivers and everyone that's working with them to support them to make this care possible, you know, supporting patients through the past year and a half, getting shots in arms for the vaccinations, et cetera. It's incredibly challenging for organizations to be able to really take a step back and carve out the time to say, you know, how are our different service lines trending and what does this mean for us when there's so many fires to be put out? So I think, you know, the first and most important thing that we're able to do here is start to give our customers more visibility into this, to share a little bit also of some of our benchmarking and how what we see with them compares to what we're seeing across the rest of the country. And then, you know, starting off of that, I think probably one of the biggest things that our providers, their health systems, as well as actually many of our plan customers are tackling now, is really understanding how we get patients back on track for the right care. Mm-hmm. Because one interesting thing is that there's some silver linings here, right? If there's a reduction in ED use because patients are able to hop on a telehealth visit with their PCP without leaving the house, and you know they're getting the right level of care that way at the right place for lower cost and not being exposed to whatever may be floating around the ED as well, there's a lot of potential for some good outcomes there. But the flip side of it, I think, is a really strong focus on getting patients back into the care that they need and understanding really how we address that from a whole patient standpoint. So, you know, especially as you look about as you look at long COVID and the things that we're still learning and we'll probably be learning for some time around that, there's a really critical need here that a lot of our customers are digging into in terms of understanding. How do you support a patient with multiple comorbidities with a complex polypharmacy regimen who may also be having long-term impacts of having had COVID some months or a year ago.
You know, all this disruption since the spring of 2020 that really affected these service lines and reimbursement based upon them. Where is it at now? Have the service lines stabilized, or is there still a lot of volatility going on? Where are we now in the near future?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think we don't have the claims data yet to look at this most recent surge, but I suspect it'll be very similar to the second surge, and there will be, again, that decrease, especially in the inpatient space. So the biggest things I would worry about are, you know, on the inpatient side, the decrease in elective surgeries, and that those are really revenue drivers for hospitals and hospital systems, the decrease in care and follow-up for deliveries. And then I would actually really worry about the post-acute space, which was a difficult space to begin with, even before COVID. I think skilled nursing facilities and long-term care facilities were really pretty strapped going into COVID. And now there's, you know, if there's less inpatient surgeries, there's less follow-up care. So I think that's where there's probably still some significant decreases in the third surge and a lot of volatility, which makes those entities challenging to run.
And so followed up on that, elective surgeries, maybe unless there's an acute problem, a elective hip replacement or shoulder replacement, so joint replacements. And then typically those folks would go into some type of physical therapy or post-acute care for a week or two, depending on their condition. So it's kind of a trickle-down effect if you cut out those elective surgeries, especially ones, again, example, joint replacements. It's going to affect other service lines.
Absolutely. And we saw that trend in both surges is, you know, the inpatient care decreased right when COVID hit. And then the post-acute care started to decrease about 2 to 3 weeks later than the inpatient. So if you kind of think about, you know, the curve of the decrease on the inpatient side, you can see the same curve for skilled nursing facilities and long-term care facilities, but it's shifted by about 2 to 3 weeks. So I would expect that to still be the case.
We only have a couple more minutes. And one thing that kind of occurs to me in our conversation, when there's giant, maybe Medicare, which I guess is the number one payer in the United States, when they change their reimbursement, maybe they reimburse something new, or they switch from DRGs back in the 70s, diagnostic-related groupings for reimbursement, it's an opportunity for healthcare entities to see the effect it's going to have on their service lines. But when you have COVID drop in, it's like a bomb going off. There's no time to prepare for it at all. It's just kind of a scramble situation. And so probably for most folks in healthcare data analytics, this is the first time we've seen anything that's been this acutely disruptive, I would imagine. Anything you want to say about that? Or hopefully we won't see this kind of disruptive activity again, because it's difficult to plan for it.
Yeah, I can say from my end, I've been doing analysis on claims-based utilization for about 9 years now, and I've certainly never seen anything like this, and I hope to never see anything like this again.
I would agree, and certainly, you know, not only folks like you, the two of y'all who are looking at the data, but those providers had never seen anything like it. Certainly in the ambulatory space, all the patients disappeared, and then inpatient, they were suddenly overwhelmed with patients really sick with COVID. So, yeah, really an historic event. Go ahead, Anna.
Yeah, and you know what, Jim? I'll throw in a little bit of silver lining here because, you know, many of us in health IT also saw something that we never thought we'd see, which is the adoption of healthcare technology moved at the speed of light in early 2020. Mm-hmm. Compared to what we were used to seeing. You know, to think that telehealth was rolled out so rapidly across so many organizations because it was what we had to do. I mean, there are tons of situations across our customers that I can think of where, you know, new templates were stood up for handling the way that intake is done for COVID patients, et cetera, all things that, you know, 2 or 3 months earlier would have been a 3 to 6 month planning and design and process. So if anything, you know, I think that maybe that's something that we have to look forward to is that we've really confirmed that we do have the ability in our DNA to evolve very rapidly and to respond to these types of concerns. And it offers a really great opportunity for us to think about how we continue to iterate and get into a more rapid process of continuous improvement as we think about, you know, everything from day-to-day hospital and health system operations to the longer-term work of population health.
You know, and I appreciate that, Anna, for us to end on a high note. That's true. The rapid adoption of that technology from single providers to large hospital system has been amazing to witness. It really has been inspiring. Thanks for joining me on this episode to our audience of the Tate Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guests today, Jake Hochberg and Anna Basevit from Arcadia. You can find out more about Arcadia at Arcadia, ARCADIA.io, Arcadia.io. You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.